Hi, everybody. Welcome to English Digest. I'm Stephanie.
I'm Tom.
Hey, it's day two of our people unit. We're talking about the genius artist Vincent van Gogh. We talked about his background. The way he started out in life was very sad to me. He had a brother who passed away, and when he was born, a year after his brother's death, his parents decided, hey, let's give him the same name as that little guy who died before. So, you know, he grew up with this name from a brother who had died. So it probably actually was kind of a sad feeling around that whole name. So he had to grow up that way. He was very serious as a child. He wasn't one of these guys who was the class clown, you know, kind of goofed around and made people laugh. He was very serious, but he was very passionate. Whatever he did it with all his heart. But he often felt a sense of melancholy, which means sadness that just goes on and on and on. So while in school, he was taught by somebody named Huysmans, who really emphasized the importance of really portraying the impression of one single object instead of just showing off with all your artistic techniques and how well you could paint. And he was a very, very good painter. He did leave school very abruptly, probably just decided one day, that's it, I'm done. Maybe he didn't warn anybody. He didn't tell people, I'm thinking about leaving school. If you do something abruptly, it happens just without warning. But he kept that philosophy with him for the rest of his life. And you can see that it's had an impact on his work, his painting. So we know that he also had bad luck in his love life. What are we going to learn about today, Tom?
Well, we'll actually talk about his career and when he tried to actually make money from his art. As we know, he didn't really achieve a great amount of success in his lifetime. But like a lot of artists, of course, he became famous after he passed away, which is unfortunate, but that's the way it is a lot of times. And of course, we're all safe and sound now because he's gone. We don't have to worry about being around a nutcase or a wacko or something like that. He's dead now.
He was a little crazy, yeah.
So we can just look at his paintings and be nice and safe there.
They're beautiful.
Yeah, he did leave these behind for us to enjoy. So let's continue talking about the life and times of Vincent van Gogh. Let's read the entire contents of today's lesson one time.
Van Gogh finally took up art as his occupation at age 27. His early work was stark, reflecting his surroundings in Belgium, where he began working as an artist in earnest. When this more realistic work didn't sell, he began painting in the popular Impressionist style, mixing it with influences from other styles. He moved to southern France around this time, and many of his works began to display gorgeous blues and yellows. Some of the most famous of these are the paintings from the Sunflowers series. Each one shows a bunch of large, vibrant, yellow sunflowers in a vase on a table. And the series was intended to decorate his studio. Starry Night, perhaps his most famous piece, was completed only about a year before he died. Van Gogh painted it while dwelling in an asylum in the countryside, after he suffered a mental breakdown. This masterpiece is a stunning depiction of the pre-dawn view from his window. Dark trees, the dim lights of the nearby village, and brilliant heavenly bodies. The whirling strokes in the sky make the moon and stars seem to dance, and the longer one looks at the painting, the stronger the sense of movement becomes. It is this piece that has inspired a new immersive touring exhibit about Van Gogh called Van Gogh Alive. It features shifting projections of his artwork that fill the walls and floors of a cavernous space. There is also an interactive portion where participants can learn to sketch. Best of all, this experience is accessible to the Taiwanese public until July 12th.
Okay, let's talk about the contents of today's lesson. Again, we're talking about the enduring appeal of Vincent van Gogh. People are going to like his art for many years to come. Now, let's talk about his career here. Van Gogh finally took up art as his occupation at age 27. So if you're studying art in university, of course, you're working on your craft, you're painting, you're studying with a teacher, but you're probably not earning a living from doing that, okay? So he finally took up art as his occupation or as his job when he was 27 years old. He actually started painting in order to sell those paintings and make a living from his artwork.
Right. So his early work here, it says, was stark. That's a way to describe something stark. I think of a house that has very few pieces of furniture, maybe no paint, not very many decorations. I think back to the dormitory that I lived in. It was pretty stark until I decorated it. His early work, his paintings here are described as stark. So probably not as colorful as we're used to nowadays. Stark, yeah, it's really bare or kind of severe looking. Yeah, I can't imagine him producing anything that would be described as stark. Because I think of his paintings as being very vivid, really colorful and full of movement in the way his brush strokes would be, you know, kind of circular. The reason his early work was described as being stark was because it reflected his surroundings in Belgium. Belgium, of course, is a country in Europe where they speak Dutch and they speak French as well. And he began working as an artist in earnest at that time. Maybe he was just goofing around, playing around, trying to be an artist, but not really serious about it. But if you start to do something in earnest, it means you're serious and you're really going to just buckle down and work hard now. You're not messing around. You're doing it with a lot of integrity and passion. You really want to succeed.
Yep, he started working as an artist full time. He wanted to make money from his art, or he was serious about being an artist. He wasn't just screwing around, as you said.
Right.
And when this more realistic work didn't sell, he began painting in the popular Impressionist style, mixing it with influences from other styles. So yeah, if you're a painter trying to make a living, of course you have to paint things that people are going to buy. So gee, maybe people just weren't interested in stark work there, reflecting his surroundings in Belgium. Maybe it was kind of depressing or not visually stimulating enough, but he painted what he saw. And that work just didn't sell. It was realistic. It was like photographs, I suppose, but people weren't interested. So he thought, well, I guess I better change my approach here. So he began painting in the popular Impressionist style, in Xiang Hua, as we say in Chinese, and that was quite popular at the time. So he thought, well, you know, Monet and Manet and Cezanne are selling paintings using the Impressionist style.
I love that style.
Lots of people liked it back then, and they still do. So he decided, well, I guess I'll try my hand at that. But still, I'd like to put my own personal touch on it.
Personal stamp on it, right?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, have his own unique style. So he mixed it with influences from other styles, and he started to develop his own personal style.
He did. I always thought, you know, he was a little later than most of those impressionistic painters, artists. He definitely had a stronger style, I thought. He used more paint and more movement. They would use very light strokes, and his seemed to be quite heavy. So he also moved to southern France, as Tom was talking about. It's a beautiful area, and many of his works suddenly began to display what he's really known for are those really gorgeous blues and yellows. I love the color palette that he has. Now, some of the most famous of these, and these refers back to his works, are the paintings from the Sunflowers series. A lot of these artists would have a series of paintings all around the same theme or the same view. We've got the lily pad or the water lily series from one of the Impressionist paintings. Was it Manet? I can't remember. But anyway, they would have several paintings that would emerge research at the same time all around one particular view or theme. He's got some that are about the sunflowers. This is my sister's favorite painting, is one of his sunflowers paintings. She just makes her happy to look at it, which is kind of interesting because he was so unhappy. And yet he produced something that brought a lot of happiness to other people, which is really a talent. Now, what's in the sunflower series? Well, each painting shows a bunch of large, vibrant yellow sunflowers in a vase on a table. And the series was intended just to decorate his studio. He wasn't producing them actually to sell. You know, I guess they did sell eventually, but he thought, no, let's liven up the place. Let's put a little color in this place. How could I decorate my studio? Let me just paint some stuff and hang it up. So vibrant is a word that's very similar to vivid. Vibrant, though, we'll often use to talk about somebody and the way they live or their personality. She was a very vibrant person, you know, always kind of lively, happy, always going here and there. Yeah, so they are vibrant, vivid. The color yellow that he uses is very bright and vivid and gorgeous. But if you haven't seen these, I encourage you to take a look. Those are quite beautiful too.
Yep, they're vibrant. They're full of energy and full of life. Like Tokyo is a vibrant modern city, for example. And of course, he did a series of these paintings of sunflowers, a bunch of sunflowers, maybe like a bouquet or something like that. They were in a vase sitting on a table, and the series was intended to decorate his studio. So yeah, he was basically painting them for himself. And another famous of his works called Starry Night is what we'll talk about in just a couple of seconds. But right now, we're going to take a break and listen to our Chinese teacher.
大家好，欢迎收听 English Digest， 我是哈利。我们今天要阅读的文章是 Unit 9的第二天课程。昨天介绍完梵谷的人生后，我们今天接着介绍梵谷的作品。我们看到第一段的第一句，Van Gogh finally took up art as his occupation at age 27. 梵谷终于在27岁时开始从事艺术工作。片语 take up 在本句表示开始从事的意思，而 take up 也有占用时间或空间的意思。The job interviews will take up half an hour to an hour for each applicant. 工作面试将会占用每位应征者半个小时到一个小时。Take up 还有接受建议或挑战的意思。Despite the difficulty of the task, Ashley took up the challenge. 尽管这个任务困难，艾希莉还是接受了这个挑战。另外 ,take up 也可以表示开始养成什么的习惯。Toby took up smoking when he was in high school. 托比在中学时开始学会抽烟。我们接着看到第一段的第二句。本句使用了分词构句，原本的句子是 His early work was stark, and it reflected his surroundings. 主要子句的主词 his early work 和 and 子句的主词 it 是同一个主词，可以省略 it 和 and， 而 it 后面的动词 reflected 为主动语态，因此改成现在分词 reflecting。如果省略主词的字句为被动语态，则将 be 动词和主词一起省略，只留下过去分词。文章的第二段介绍梵谷的几幅知名画作，例如梵谷画了一系列的向日葵。我们看到第二段的第二句， Each one shows a bunch of large, vibrant yellow sunflowers. 这一句文章讲说每一幅都显示出桌上花瓶中一大束鲜黄的向日葵，而该系列旨在装饰他的工作室。动词 intent 有意图、打算的意思，后面可以接不定词 to 加原形动词。 The employee intended to take a few days off next month. 这名员工打算下个月休假几天。如果要表示某事物的用意是要怎么样的时候，则是用被动语态 be intended to 加原形动词，或是 be intended for somebody or something. The picture book is intended for children aged 7 to 10. 这本图画书是要给7到10岁的孩童阅读。
We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Okay, let's continue in talking about some of the works of Vincent van Gogh. And we just talked about the Sunflower series, which was a series of paintings of sunflowers. They're not just one painting of sunflowers, but there are several. And perhaps his most famous piece is Starry Night. It was completed only about a year before he died. So yeah, like I said last time in our program, when people mention the word Van Gogh, they probably usually think of this painting, Starry Night. That's probably his most famous piece. And unfortunately, though, he died about a year after he finished it.
Wow, that was one of his last paintings, it sounds like. So Van Gogh painted it while dwelling in an asylum in the countryside after he suffered a mental breakdown. Oh, his life is just so sad. So when you dwell somewhere, that just means where you live. We don't often use that in just plain conversation. Yeah, I'm dwelling in Taipei. That just makes me laugh. Yeah, I'm living there, but we do use it in writing and in literature. You'll often come across this word dwelling. It's also a noun. Guys, a noun that's just used to describe a house or an apartment or any place of residence where someone lives. That's a nice dwelling across the street. But again, it would be a little weird for someone to use that in conversation. Unless they were teaching a class, you know, about literature, maybe a professor was standing up and talking. But we do use it in writing, so you need to learn that one, to dwell somewhere. An asylum. Oh, I see that word, and it just kind of scares me, because when I see movies about mental hospitals or mental institutes or mental asylum, an asylum was a really scary place back when he was living there. They didn't know how to cure some of these people. They didn't have the drugs that have been developed. You know, these days we have things that can help people who suffer. And so they would just put these crazy people in this building and, you know, that would be the end of them. They usually never came out again. Asylum, yeah. It's a hospital of sorts where people who are suffering mentally can recover, hopefully, but sometimes they never come out again.
Actually, asylum refers to a place of protection. Mm-hmm. So you could talk about political asylum, people leaving a dangerous country like, say, Venezuela, and moving someplace else where they can be safe, political asylum. But in this particular case, we're talking about an insane asylum.
You know what, though? Yeah. For them, I think the asylum wasn't a protection to the people who were living there. It was a protection to the people outside of the asylum. Mm. Because, you know, sometimes these people could suddenly attack and kill you.
Right. Someplace to keep them away from the rest of us. So he was living there. He was dwelling there. He was living there in the countryside. And then he suffered this mental breakdown.
Ooh.
Breakdown is when everything falls apart. Some people have nervous breakdowns. Maybe if they're working, say, as a stockbroker for many years, the pressure is just too much. Eventually, they have a breakdown. They maybe start crying uncontrollably and they need to be taken away and start taking medicine and stuff like that. So, yeah, he did have this mental breakdown around the time he painted Starry Night. Now, this masterpiece is a stunning depiction of the pre-dawn view from his window. So a depiction here is basically how you portray something.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at something and then how you present it to someone else, you could depict things in various forms. You could depict a sunrise with photography, for example, with special filters or something like that. In this particular case, he had a view just before dawn, just before the sun rose, and he looked at this landscape, and then he decided, hey, I'm going to paint that. That looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it really does. So here's what's in the painting, guys, in case you haven't seen it. There are dark trees. You'll also see the dim. Dim just means a light, but it's very soft. It's not very strong. You can dim the lights in a room by turning the lights down if you have that kind of lighting function. So the dim lights of the nearby village. Yeah, really late at night, pre-dawn, the lights are pretty low. Not a lot of people are up. And there are also brilliant brilliant heavenly bodies. Heavenly bodies here refers to stars and the moon, things that are in the sky. The sun could be a heavenly body. Depends on what they're talking about. But in his painting, the sun's not out yet, and it's simply the stars. I'm not sure there's a moon in it. I have to double check. So the whirling strokes. This is what I think of when I think of his painting style. He used a lot of thick paint with a strong stroke. Whirling means going kind of in a circular motion. You can whirl as a dancer. If you whirl around, just means you're turning around and around and around as you're dancing. These are strokes that are kind of circular. And a stroke, if you're a painter, is just the movement you make with your paintbrush. Stroke. We use that a lot here in Taiwan or in Asian societies where you have characters that you write. We don't use strokes so much to talk about ABCs and putting ABCs or the alphabet on a paper, but to write a Chinese character, you'll often count the strokes or make strokes with that beautiful Maobi, you know, the pen that's so beautiful, the brush that's beautiful. He had strokes and they had these whirling strokes in the sky and it made the moon and the stars seem to dance. You really get this feeling of movement when you look at this painting.
Yep, a stroke, one movement of the brush, just like in Chinese characters, you know, like the character Da, big, has three strokes. Okay, so in this particular case, they're whirling, spinning around each other in the sky, and the moon and the stars seem to dance. I'm imagining this was painted before electricity was common. So in those days, you could look at the sky and you could see the Milky Way galaxy pretty clearly. Mm-hmm. So this was obviously a depiction of all those heavenly bodies, the moon, the stars, they all seem to dance. And the longer one looks at the painting, the stronger the sense of movement becomes. So there's that pattern, the longer, the stronger, or the harder I work, the richer I will become, for example.
Yeah.
So yeah, the longer you look at the painting, the stronger that sense of movement becomes. I believe this painting is owned by the Museum of Modern Art in New York, so maybe if you go there.
MoMA.
MoMA, yes, so you could probably have a chance to look at it for a long time and get that sense of movement.
Yeah, that's a great museum to go visit, especially if you like modern art. Now, in the final paragraph, it says, it is this piece, or Starry Night, that has inspired a new immersive touring exhibit about Van Gogh called Van Gogh Alive. When you're talking about the title of something, a movie, a book, you'll often see the type changes to this italicized look. It looks like it's kind of leaning to the left. That's a name. So we change the type or how it looks. Immersive just means it feels like you're right into something. We often use it to talk about virtual reality with a lot of the new video games. You feel like you're right in the game, or if you're watching a movie that's got the 3D effect, you know, you feel like you're right on the screen. So it's an immersive touring exhibit about Van Gogh. Why do they call it immersive? Well, they're featuring these projections of his artwork. These projections come from probably a slide machine or some sort of piece of equipment. I'm sure it's a slide machine, and or maybe it's just a computer running PowerPoint. Who knows? And the different pictures of his paintings will come and go from the walls to the floors. It's in this really big space. They're describing the space as being cavernous, meaning it's really deep, quite big. Sometimes it can be empty, a cave that you can go into a mountain, sometimes very cavernous. It's just a big, deep space where you feel like there's a lot of room.
Yeah, it might be quite cool. Of course, I've always been disappointed to see major works of art because they always put them behind glass and you can't really see the strokes very well.
To protect them, yeah.
And 1,000 people want to look at the painting when you want to look at the painting. So maybe this big exhibition with projections might actually be a better way to look at his artwork in this cavernous, huge space. There is also an interactive portion where participants can learn to sketch. That sounds like fun, kind of a user-friendly there, interactive, and you might be able to paint just like Van Gogh did many years ago. And best of all, this experience is accessible to the Taiwanese public until July 12th. Aha, that's why we're talking about Van Gogh, because this exhibition is going on right now as we speak. Mm-hmm. It's accessible to all of you. Accessible means you can get to it. You can go there and check it out yourself.
Yeah, accessible. This sounds like a great thing to go and take a look at, guys. Do it while it's here. It leaves July 12th, so you got to get in there before then. Right now, we're going to listen to our Chinese teacher, and then we'll be back to say goodbye.
我们接着看到第二段最后一句的后半句。The longer one looks at the painting, the stronger the sense of movement becomes. 人们看着画作的时间越长，流动感就变得越强烈。本句用了 the 比较级加 s 加 v 的句型，表示越怎么样就越怎么样的意思。使用此句型时要注意，两句之间不必用任何连接词来连接，而当动词是连缀动词，例如 be 动词 look, taste, smell, become 时，要搭配形容词比较级。如果是一般动词的话，则是搭配副词比较级。The farther we walked into the woods, the more beautiful the scenery became. 我们越走进森林里，风景就越漂亮。前半句的动词 walk 是一般动词，搭配副词 far 的比较级 farther。后半句的动词是连缀动词 became， 搭配形容词比较级 more beautiful。我们看到文章的最后一段的第一句。It is this piece that has inspired a new immersive touring exhibit. 正是这一作品激发了关于梵谷全新、身临其境的巡回展览。本句使用了分裂句型来强调语气。分裂句型为 it is 或是 it was 加强调部分，加 that 加句子的剩余部分，表示正是怎么样的意思。本句原来是This piece has inspired a new immersive tourist exhibit. 为了强调主词 this piece, 就将 this piece 放在 it is 和 that 之间，句子的剩余部分则放在 that 子句后，形成强调用的分裂句型。以上就是今天的课程讲解，谢谢大家收听。
Okay, that's all for today, everybody. So, hey, if you choose to go check out this exhibition, have yourself a great time looking at the artwork of Vincent van Gogh. From all of us here at English Digest, I'm Tom.
I'm Stephanie.
Goodbye.
Bye.